Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
The Doors were one of the most influential and iconic bands of the 60s. They built a dark counterculture sound on a foundation of Ray Manzarek's organ playing that combined elements of poetry, blues, rock and roll, jazz, and psychedelic music. At the front of it all was their charismatic, volatile lead singer, Jim Morrison. There's no doubt that he was the embodiment of the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing. The good-looking frontman who helped forge his legacy by dying young. But was Jim Morrison a brilliant visionary of rock and roll or a buffoon? On one hand, he saw himself as the Lizard King, a poet and mystic who was influenced by his background in literature and film. On the other hand, Jim was also an erratic, self-indulgent showman, a hardcore alcoholic who clashed with his parents, his bandmates, and most famously, the police and Janis Joplin. In this episode of Prisoners of Rock and Roll, we're taking a look at the life and legacy of Jim Morrison and debating if he was brilliant or a buffoon.
Strange when you're a stranger, faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 77. It ain't no sin to be glad you're alive. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm behind the mic tonight with my co-host and my very good friend, a man I've been going to concerts and talking music with for almost 30 years. He needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. The one and only Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks as well as McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia, and we're proudly part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Pantheon is the network for music podcasts. What's going on, brother?
I am rocking, bro. Music is my life, and I love being here and talking to you about it.
Right on. I'm feeling much better. I don't sound like...
Yeah, you were really busted up.
Yeah, dude, I spent so much time editing the last episode because I kept coughing and sniffling and all congested. Feeling better, man. All good.
It sounded great, though. I you did an amazing job, as always.
I was asleep within 20 minutes of us finishing that last episode, but it's all good, man.
Yeah, what's going on with you? What's happening?
Not much, dude. My daughter went over to London for a semester. She's in college. She's a junior, so she's over there living the life, I guess, as they say.
So, going young once. Let her have her fun, you know. Let her be responsible and live on her own for a couple months. You know, we'll see what happens. You'll be surprised.
She left on Monday. We're recording this on Wednesday, so she's been gone for a couple days and she's getting all settled in, starting her classes, and it's only 4 months.
Will she be like listening to our show while she's away?
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope she does too. We're worldly.
Every time we talk about music, I was like, you know, you can learn more about this artist by listening to our show and episode blah blah blah. She just rolls her eyes, but she does a couple podcasts on her own for school, so she knows she's in the industry, as we like to say.
Oh yeah, cool girl, world traveler.
I've actually asked her for some tips on like editing and stuff like that, since she's like a film production student and way smarter than I am.
She can like roll on our stuff anytime, dude.
She would totally come on here sometime, and because she's into all kinds of, she's got great taste in music, and she's
We taught her that. She had some good teachers. You got to teach these kids about rock and roll, man. It's like, what's more important in life, trigonometry or rock and roll? What are they, you know, like, seriously? I learned more from a 3-minute record than I did from all day in school, cuz.
As we were walking through the Newark airport and I was watching her go to the gate, and I was sadly and fondly looking at her, the back of her backpack. She had a button on it, said punk rock on it.
That's what she is, man. She is so proud of her, my niece. She's like her mom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like her mom, man. So
take no prisoners. I love it. I love that about your wife. Take no prisoners, man.
Yeah, she puts up with no shit. Yeah, dude, so she's over there. She's living the dream. I'm already counting down the days till she comes home. She's going to turn 21 while she's over there. Looking forward to coming home and saying, hey, why don't you go grab a beer with your dad?
You think she'll be going to Paris?
I don't know, man. We haven't talked too much about like what her plans are.
Because you know who's buried in Paris.
Jim Morrison is buried in Paris.
Jim Morrison is buried in Paris next to all these amazing poets. It's unbelievable.
That was masterful how you just made that transition, dude. See, you're getting really good at this, man.
I'm trying.
Nice job.
Hey, I do this for fun, but I'm an artist. Everything I do.
Right on, man. If you're going to do something, do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, we're trying to approach 2024 a little differently, where we're like coming up with ideas for several shows in advance. And this one was on the list kind of early. And I love it. I love the
topic. It was more like the title. I just came up with the title and the show writes itself. You know, like Jim Morrison had so many different skins to him, like a lizard. He's the Lizard King. So many layers to him. I love the Doors. I always have. I love my first introduction to the Doors was when the movie came out. We rented it at our local VHS rental tape store. And I fell in love with the Doors right away. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have been like 13 years old watching this movie because it was so dark and so fucked up. But Val Kilmer to me is Jim Morrison, you know?
Some of the guys in the band said they watched it and they were like, oh my God, it's Jim Morrison. Like, they weren't like thrilled with the movie the way it portrayed him, but they said there were times where it was indistinguishable between the two of them.
There was a book that they based the movie off of, and it's John Densmore's book. He was the drummer for the Doors. And he wrote a book that was all the controversial, bad side of Jim Morrison, and that's what they took the movie. Oliver Stone, you know, Oliver Stone had exaggerated a lot of it, you know, for movie sakes. He's known to do that, you know, like with JFK and a lot of shit. He like adds on to the history. He adds on to it, but like, he is a great frontman. He's a great singer. As a songwriter, I think he's great. I'm not in the poetry. You are. You know, I'm sure we can talk about a bunch of different things about him.
So I was an English major in college, and like kind of modern American poetry was like my bag, was like what I really studied. And I tried writing a paper one time on one of his books, and I was like, I couldn't do it. I was like, I can't spend hours and hours and hours with this stuff, because it just wasn't, maybe because I've never taken drugs, so maybe I couldn't connect with some of that shit.
No, but, like, dude, I have taken drugs and that shit makes no fucking sense. Like, the only way you're gonna understand it, and if you're tripping balls while you're reading it, you know, even for me, I've experimented a bunch of stuff. I think his poetry is crap. You know, it's just like all these, like, I don't know, cliche, like I'm a paper cup on the beach. You know, like.
Yeah, and I messaged you last night because I was going down the rabbit hole. You know, I listened to all the Door stuff, and then I started listening to some of his, like, spoken word stuff, the stuff that came off of the, American, what's that fucking album called?
Yeah, I was listening a little bit to it. And it's just
an American Prayer.
It's basically his spoken word with the Doors playing back up after he died.
I messaged you yesterday. I was like, all right, I've had enough of
you had
Jim
enough
Morrison.
Of Jim Morrison.
And I like the Doors. I love
the Doors, but you know, we've been listening for 2 weeks. You know, to myself, I'm like, all right, I'm really enjoying this, but let's do this show already because I'm ready to move on.
Yeah, I am too. And I normally don't get that way. I'm normally like so involved in all the shit that we've been listening to that I'm kind of like, oh man, I got to move on to something else. Today when I got to work, I was listening to something totally different instead of the Doors.
As much as the Doors made unbelievable music, they made some crappy music though too, bro. You know, like each album had a hit on it. And I think each album they got a little bit better and better and better. Like L.A. Woman is a great record, you know, and that's like their last one.
Yeah, dude, that's a great point. I mean, when they're at their best, you can put them up against any rock and roll band and they kick ass. But then some of the stuff that they did was like not real good.
Well, they were totally what their name was. They were opening doors of perception in your mind. They really went to the edge of writing songs like The End and Unknown Soldier. Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Yeah. But these real deep fucking songs instead of Hello, I Love You. You know, it's just like these, and they're bummer songs. You know, like The End is a bummer, man.
Yeah, when you listen to them, it's like you got to keep that in context, like when they're making their music, right? Because there's like the hippie movement is going on. Like they're a kind of dark band. Like they covered dark shit. Their sound was darker. Just compared to everything else that was going on, like in San Francisco right up the road, where it's all the hippie shit, and then these guys are making this music.
Yeah, I think, you know, like the hippie shit was one side of the trip, all the happy trip, and the Doors were the bum out trip. Like the, you know, like the trip that's gone wrong and you're having a bad time. You know, that's what they are. Their music is the trip gone bad. It's different, and it's evil, and it's poetic, and it's dramatic. It's almost theater-like. And Jim Morrison was like the first, I don't know, he was not James Dean. He was a dark poet. You know, he had that like mystery behind him. You know, he was a fucking blown out rock star. You know, he thought he was Jack Kerouac on the road, you know, before he was in the band. You know, he went, what did he go to, UCLA?
Yeah.
For a film degree. And that's when the band started coming up together, is when he dropped out of college and he ran into Ray Manzarek, and they're like, you know, I'm writing songs, and like, oh, let's get a band together. Jim's like, I can't sing. And Ray's like, oh, let's just try it anyway. And, you know, bam, the fucking Doors.
I think one of the things that makes them interesting is that like they're like when they were making music, that they were inspired by like literature and film and stuff like that. Like other bands before that, that wasn't their bag. Like that wasn't where they were coming from.
And this is like before the Velvet Underground, you know, like, I don't know if it's before, don't quote me as that, but it's before, like it's right around when Andy Warhol was being famous, and the Doors fit in with that so amazingly. Like they were between art and rock. Jim Morrison was a walking tribute to all blues and rock and roll. Like, you know, like he was a blues man. He died as a blues man.
And they were the embodiment. I mean, he was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Like I have the Spotify playlist on my laptop as we're talking, and it's like, yeah, that famous picture of him on it's on the very best of the Doors album. You know, he's got the shirt off, and he's got the long hair, and he's pointing.
He's got the Beat It the necklace on.
Yeah. I mean, he was a good looking dude. He just exuded sex. It was just part of his, like, you know, the way he danced and the stuff the way he acted on stage, and, you know, even like wearing leather pants on stage, like that's been a thing in rock and roll since he did that.
Oh, yeah. Like, he was the first. I mean, Elvis was the first everything. But Jim Morrison was, like, one of the first just frontmen of a band. Didn't play an instrument. Didn't do it. Well, you know, Mick Jagger did it and everything like that. But he did it a different way. Did it so dark and so, like, no apologies about being dark.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know if... I mean, Mick Jagger... Like, if Mick Jagger had died when he was 27, would I think differently about Mick Jagger? You know, Mick Jagger's an old man now, and he's still out there dancing, and it's cool, but he's not as dangerous as he used to be. Or not.
I don't think he was dangerous as Jim Morrison was. You know, I mean, by 27, Jim Morrison had an FBI file on him. You know, I mean, everybody knew who he was. From my father asked me what we were doing our show about, and I said the Doors, and he's like, "Well, that's that guy, Jim Morrison." I'm like, exactly. You know, he's like, he's pretty different. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why we're doing a show on him. And I told him the title. He's like, he is a buffoon.
He really was like one of the first like shock rock guys. Jim Morrison, not your dad.
Oh yeah, like my dad's full shock rock.
Right. But he really was. I mean, the shit he was doing on stage and
God, he was like, I can't explain it. You have to go out and watch. He was like first one, like jumping up in the air like he was and like playing dead on stage. And, you know, you have to watch him. If you don't know, then you don't know. You can't explain Jim Morrison by words.
The movie's a good intro to Jim Morrison. It's not my favorite biopic ever made, but it is a good, like, it touches on the big points and the major incidents that they had.
They based that off of one side of John Densmore's book. Now, Ray Manzarek wrote another book. It was called Light My Fire. And he wrote all the good shit about Jim Morrison. And that was a fun book to read, but it wasn't as fun as the all the crazy shit that Jim Morrison did in the beginning and everything. A lot of things that didn't make the movie was in the book. You know, the book is way more interesting.
I mean, and I get it, right? You're trying to tell the whole story of a band in an hour and a half, 2 hours. So there's only so much you can do.
And Oliver Stone. And Oliver Stone just makes controversial movies, you know. Like Ray Manzarek said, you know, they were showing these things where Jim was being a jerk off. He's like, I'd bring Jim home to my parents' house for the weekend, and he was Eddie Haskell. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. Like, you know, he had this side to him that was the boy next door. You know, maybe that's like how he grew up. Well, his father was a general in the army.
Yeah, it was an admiral in the Navy.
And I'm sure he's a brat. He got moved all over the place.
He said at one point, like, that his parents were dead, and the initial reaction, and they weren't, and the initial reaction was, well, he's an asshole. He wants to disown his parents. But then he said something like he didn't want everybody to look up who his father was and then drag his father into that world that he was in, that Jim Morrison lived in.
His father was, like, top dog, man. Like, he had secrets. You know, Jim Morrison had probably access to secrets as a little kid to, like, things. That's how high up his dad was.
His dad was, like, involved in, like, the Gulf of Tonkin incident that, like, started the Vietnam War. But it's interesting because his father said something. I saw an interview with his dad, like, near the end of his life, and he was like, I never really even went back. Even after Jim died, he's like, I never really listened to any Doors music. And I guess he famously wrote Jim Morrison a letter, and I wrote the quote down, like, you need to give up any idea of singing or any connection with a music group because of what I consider to be a complete lack of talent in this direction. And I'm like, so his dad was always like, dude, you suck at this. What are you wasting your time for? And I understand, as a parent, I kind of understand the, like, oh, okay, you're going to go be a rock and roll singer. Like, how about getting a real job? And I was like, I don't think Jim Morrison is a bad singer at all.
No, he's a freak of nature, man. He's just had it. He opened up and he fucking sang.
He just got that deep voice, and you know, he wasn't some like hack who just came out there.
But he had a great band backing him up though, too. I mean, to dynamically scream like he did, you know, the band held that together. Like he was nothing without the band.
I think I like the band more than I like him, just because they sound so unique. And I always kind of wonder, like, what is it about this band that makes them sound so different? And it's like, right, they don't have a bass player.
Yeah, that's the great thing about Ray Manzarek, man. He plays the top and the bottom, and it's crazy fucking shit. Let's give an example.
Yeah, please.
I have Light My Fire on here. It has a great intro, and it's actually from Philadelphia in 1970. This is a live version, but we still get a good thing of Ray's intro.
Cool. Yeah, let's hear it. Here we go.
You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we could get much higher.
I'm saying, and that was in 70, and he would die in 71.
Yeah.
So his voice was still strong at the end of his life.
We're talking about Ray Manzarek. So he played like a special, he played like a bass piano that would.
He played
so
like a Hammond organ, didn't he?
Yeah, he played an organ, and he played, it was called a Fender Rhodes piano bass, like a little, wow. It's like a short piano. It only had like the bass keys on it that he would play with one hand to fill the bass. And sometimes he played like a harpsichord, and I was like, shit, that's it. That's what makes them so different, is like their sound is built on the organ and not guitar or anything else.
You nailed it. That's what made them sound differently than things in San Francisco. There was no like organ going on. Not
something
like that.
Something I was reading said like the organ playing made them sound like a dark carnival ride or like a dark like merry-go-round. I was like, right. I was like, shit, man. Yeah, it was great.
Love it. Can we play one of my favorite songs?
Yeah. What do you want to hear?
Dude, I love 5 to 1.
Okay. Studio version. Here you go.
Dude, it's like he's starting a fucking riot. You know, like 5 people to 1 cop. You know, like, I don't know. It just, like, it sounds like he's ready to start a riot.
It's like, maybe it's just like a brooding kind of sound. Like, the bass line on that was just really cool to hear.
Yeah. There's just, so different than every rock and roll thing that was out there. Like, what was going on? The fucking Hermits was fucking going on. Like,
yeah,
here's like the British invasion. And this is, you know, this is what we got. Like, fuck the British invasion. We're going to be dark.
Right. They weren't tied up in the British invasion. They weren't tied up in the San Francisco scene. They're one of the few bands that are like, they're college educated guys, or like, you know, they were at least in college. And they're singing about, like, you know, literature and a whole bunch of other shit. Like, other people weren't doing that at the time when these guys were big.
I don't think there was enough intellectuals in rock and roll, tell you the truth, bro.
Yeah, you know? even their name, like, they got from an Aldous Huxley story, who wrote Brave New World, and they got that from the Aldous Huxley book, came from a William Blake poem. It was like, you know, even that. Or shit, like, they got fired from, you know, one of their gigs because Morrison was telling this, like, vulgar telling like, the Oedipus legends. You know, he's telling dirty literature, dirty ancient literature, and they lost a gig for it, I think, at the Whiskey.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was famously did not end shows. Like, they would start, but then by the time 30 minutes into it, the gig owner would, the owner of the bar or whatever finally had enough of his mouth and like, that's it, you're done, pull the cord on him. I had this guy down the bar made me do that to him. Like, I was like, holy shit, dude, who the hell do you think you are? And like, I unplugged him. I told him to get out. He was like, oh, I thought you were going to beat me up. I'm like, yeah, he was like saying some crazy shit, and that's kind of, are you trying to be like Jim Morrison kind of thing? Like,
I hope you told the warden, and I hope you told the warden that I don't care who you think you are.
I don't care who you know, Rob. You cannot pull that shit in McCusker's.
Right. We don't do that here. The ancient literature, not ancient, but like the old story about like Dr. Faust selling his soul to the devil for brilliance. It's like Jim Morrison had all of these demons that allowed him to make this great music, but ultimately killed him. And there's tons of, right, it's Lane Staley from Alice in Chains and, you know, Scott Weiland. There's like all kinds of guys in music that had this, but he was like one of the first ones.
Yeah, I think anything, they wanted to emulate him. You know, like, I want to be great. I want to die young.
I mean, yeah. And all those rock and roll guys that have come after him wanting to be the sex symbol on stage. Again, Jim Morrison was one of the first ones. And Jim was a little different in that, like, he didn't start living the lavish lifestyle and then get hooked on all this other shit when he started having money. He was really, like, fueled by his art. And he was already an alcoholic when he started making music.
Yeah. I mean, he just wanted to numb himself all the time. You know, who knows the demons that he had inside of him that he just wanted to destroy himself. I mean, it was no doubt that he was very intelligent. You know?
Yeah.
Was it like so intelligent he wanted to destroy himself? Because I've met people like that. What's the point? I had a friend that's very, very educated, but he's a junkie. And, you know, and he, literature and everything like that. And he's like, I want to be great, so I got to do drugs. And that's his real thinking, this guy I know. You know, I have to push my mind all the way to the limit. And that's what Jim Morrison always did. He was just fucking raging out. He wasn't just an alcoholic. He was a raging alcoholic. It's like I read interviews of bartenders in about Jim Morrison coming down the street. They would be staying outside and you see Jim Morrison walking down the street. I was like, oh, here he fucking comes. I know that. I know that feeling. Imagine.
Worst nightmare.
He is a bartender's fucking nightmare. And what are you going to do? It's Jim Morrison. You know, he would piss on the ground. He was a shitbag of the week.
Shitbag of the week.
Dun, dun, dun. He was a nasty person, man.
And I'm sure the drinking and the drugs didn't help, but he just seems like he was just an asshole. I mean, it's hard. I shouldn't say that because it's hard for me to even separate. When wasn't he drunk or doing drugs? And I mean, drugs also at this time, like, was a big part of literature. You got like the Beats and you got guys like William Burroughs was doing all kinds of, you know, heroin and smack. And yeah, it just became part of that scene. And I guess drugs and poetry and shit like that have always kind of gone hand in hand. And, you know, modern American poetry, dude, he's just a really complicated guy.
I think they all were complicated. They were, you know, originally together and they were a great blues band. I mean, they caught Delta Blues on Backdoor Man. Like the things that he says, he'll like say, I ate more chicken than you ever seen. And that's like a thing back in the day. Like, you ate enough chicken, you're a rich man. Let's play a little bit of that. He's got a great blues voice.
He does, yes. And they're singing like bluesy songs, but it's so different than so many other blues, again, because it's built on an organ.
Well, again, Robbie Krieger is a great guitar player. He's a blues guitar player. I mean, I think that's what gives the Doors that feel of the blues together with the organ, gives it another feel. It's a mixture of this crazy psychedelic thing that's new and dangerous.
Psychedelic is a great way to describe it, because they're bluesy, but they're more dark than they are dirty. They don't have that real dirty bluesy sound to it.
No, not at all. I mean, man, let's listen to a little bit of Break On Through.
We'll be right back.
Man. You know, I love the drums go after the vocals almost the way that Roger Daltrey sings with Keith Moon. Keith Moon attacked the vocals with the drums. And that's what John Densmore sounds like he's doing with Jim Morrison.
Like he's chasing.
He's attacking the phrases, you know, and like playing to the phrases. Unbelievable, man. He's a fucking amazing jazz drummer.
Right on. No, that's a great, again, you being the musician out of the two of us, I love it when you get into explanations like that. It's also, too, like, they have this dark sound, but heavy metal doesn't exist yet. So they're, like, they're pushing that envelope. They're not writing songs about, like, girls and cars, like, all the other, you know, all that early stuff that we talked about it last week on, like, you know, songs about cars. They're not different subject matter. They're just taking music in a totally different friggin' direction.
Yeah, like Moonlight Drive is such a different kind of song. And I don't think anybody sounds anything like it but the Doors. Like, there's nothing else.
Right on, man. Let's listen to a little bit of it. Okay, yeah.
City sleeps too high. Let's swim out tonight, love. It's our time to try. The ocean on our moonlight drive. Let's swim to the moon.
Nothing sounds like that. But that, you know, can you say it sounds like a Beatles song? No. Does it sound like a Rolling Stones song? No. Maybe there's a bunch of bands of psychedelic out there that I'm not aware of, but they did it better than anybody else did. I mean, I know Pink Floyd was out there, but Pink Floyd was doing like really psychedelic, uplifting kind of shit. The Doors were doing bad acid trip shit. You know,
Pink Floyd. Yeah, Pink Floyd's got like more. I don't know. It's more melodic than what the Doors are doing. And again, like the organ and the harpsichord and all that other kind of stuff underneath all the sound just really gives it that different flavor than anything else that was being played.
You being a literature major, I'm sorry. What do you think of his songwritings? Like for songs?
Some of it, man, like I think he gets a little too caught up in himself. And sure. I think as I listen to him now, as I'm in my late 40s, I was kind of like, okay. Like, I found myself rolling my eyes, but I'm also like, I'm not the idealistic 20-something. You know, I'm sitting, as I'm talking, I'm looking at, like, I have the wall in my room, my office where I record this. It's just, like, all bookshelves, and there's, like, tons of, you know, shit I read in college and stuff. I don't know, man. I'm just not part of that scene anymore, but I used to be the guy that would go to, like, open my poetry nights and do all that kind of stuff. And now, as I've gotten older, I think I'm just kind of like, all right, man, like, I don't know.
His spoken word poetry. I really like on that album he did with what they put the music to of Jim Morrison's poetry. I just recently put it on our playlist. It's called Awake. And it's his spoken word. It's pretty famous, I think.
It's interesting because they, as a band, they got big really fast.
Yeah.
Like they were on like Columbia Records. Columbia dropped them before they ever put out an album. They signed with Elektra, and it was like right around they became the house band at the Whiskey, a go-go, and they just exploded on the music scene. But then as they got popular, he wanted to do more of his like the spoken word stuff. And he said like his sister was saying, fame didn't get him what he thought it was going to get him. He wanted to do all this spoken word stuff, and the audiences didn't want to hear it. They wanted to hear the hits. And he said, like, he just was getting tired. He's like, how many times am I going to play Light My Fire on a stage? I almost feel bad for him a little bit because it's like he's so passionate about this literary side of himself, and nobody wants to hear it. They want to hear.
Well, he was such a buffoon. You know, who wouldn't? They take him seriously for 5 minutes, and then when they're around them for 20 minutes, like, oh, this guy's, we can't get involved with this guy. You know, like, look at all the shows they got fucking thrown off of. They couldn't even, they got turned down at Woodstock. they were hurting for bands for Woodstock, and they turned them down. That's nobody wanted to deal with them.
As he wanted to pursue that side more and more, he did also become more and more self-destructive. And you're right, he was just, you know, he would be trashing apartment buildings and ending concerts early, like you said, because he was just acting like a jackass.
Man,
but I mean, yeah, let me circle back and play some of Awake. I didn't want to, you know, it's kind of going off on a tangent. I don't want to skip that.
No, sure.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
That's just the thing of what he was trying to do is spoken word live.
There's another one, The Celebration of the Lizard. Yeah, so he wrote this really long spoken word piece called The Celebration of the Lizard because he called himself the Lizard King. And it was supposed to be a full side of the album Waiting for the Sun. And it was like poetry and spoken word and some stories. And it never got released like when he was still alive. It was released later. But let me play a little bit of it because it's got some – it's weird.
Lions in the street and roaming, dogs in heat, rabbit foaming, a beast caged in the heart of the city. The body of his mother rotting in the summer ground, he fled the town. He went down south and crossed the border, left the chaos and disorder back there over his shoulder.
So, like, that's 17 minutes long.
Yeah, but, like, he'll be doing that live. And everybody's like, what the fuck? Play Light My Fire, dude. Like, you know? Like,
correct.
He's mostly, like, entertaining himself.
It was making me think of And So I Married an Axe Murderer, where he goes to the poetry reading and yeah. He's writing a song about Harriet, sweet Harriet.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's like, I don't want to be dismissive of it because it was obviously so important to him. But it was like, nobody wanted to hear that. And he wanted, I don't know if he wanted to use the fame of the Doors to open doors for him to be able to do this kind of stuff. But he would just break out into it during concerts and people were just not high enough to hear that kind of stuff.
That's the thing. They were so fucking tripping their balls off why they were on stage. So it was like anything's up in the air, you know, the experiences, whatever Jim's going to give you that moment, you know, he might give you the performance of a lifetime, or he might just ramble on and call you a bunch of fucking slaves. You know, he would insult the crowd. Like he's like, you love whatever I throw at you. He would be like, he's like, I call you guys fucks. I call you guys assholes. I call you everything, but you still love me anyway. What's up with that?
That's another great point, man. Cause he was one of those dudes that had he had an opinion of what like an audience is and what like the relationship between an artist and a people that are taking in the art and all that other kind of shit, which is kind of an intellectual exercise and normally not best to be worked out on a stage during a rock and roll concert.
Well, that's what he kind of used his scapegoat is when they said he pulled his package out on stage and he was like, oh, I'm performance arts, whatever that whole scandal was. What was all that?
I've got a clip of him talking about that too, but he, so Miami in 1969, they decided they're going to play in an old airport hangar that was turned into a concert venue. And he was really getting tired of the crowds going crazy over him, which is also like he's wearing leather pants and posing with no shirt on. So it's like he's playing both sides there too. And he shows up. He's an hour late. He's shit-faced drunk. The venue only held like 7,000 people, but there were 12,000 people there.
Wow.
And he starts yelling at the audience, you're all a bunch of fucking idiots. And I guess he He's yelling at the crowd to jump up on the stage, and he takes off his shirt and he starts yelling, "You didn't come here for the music, did you? You came here for something more, didn't you? You didn't come to rock and roll. You came for something else. You came for something else. What is it? You want to see my cock, don't you? This is what you came for." And then he pulled out his junk. Now, that was like the story. Ray Manzarek says that never happened.
Yeah, but I read the Ray version, that he just like had his hand out kind of thing. Yeah. And like the witnesses they had that came forward was ridiculous. They had ties with the arresting officer, you know, something like that.
Yeah. So like a warrant was issued for his arrest for like indecency and something else. And he was arrested and he was convicted and he was sentenced to 6 months of hard labor in jail. And he died before all that appeal, before that all shook out. He passed away and he was pardoned in 2010, like posthumously. But I do have a little clip of him talking about like that. Even if he was naked, nudity is part of the art, man. And it's part of the performance art. Like you said,
Morrison dwelled on the pending Miami trial. He had cause to be worried.
Well, in the realm of art and theater, I do think that there should be complete freedom for the artist and performer. I'm not personally that convinced that nudity is always, you know, a necessary part of, you know, a play or a film, but the artist should feel free to use it if he feels like it.
He wasn't doing any art. He was a drunken jerk off with a fucking microphone. That's all it was. There was no art.
That was a very bad YouTube recording of a documentary about Jim Morrison with Henry Rollins narrating, which I thought was super cool.
But yeah, dude,
it's like you can't just, "Oh, I'm an artist," is an excuse for carte blanche to do whatever you want. Like that's what Gigi Allen did.
Oh yeah. Wait until his movie comes out. No, I'm telling you.
I know.
Bale's going to play him. Christian Bale's going to play Gigi, and he's going to win an Academy Award for it. You heard it here.
I don't even know how that would be portrayed on screen, but should make a musical out of it. Chorus line throwing their poop at people, but yeah, man, it's like you're right. But he's using as an excuse, like, "Well, I'm an artist, and if I want to pull out my junk on stage, then I should be able to do that in the interest of art." Mm-hmm. Which is what makes him a buffoon.
Yeah, he's a great songwriter. He's a great front man. He's even a great singer, but that only goes so far, bro.
I was struggling with this too, because they were like, so at the end, that whole thing, that that incident in Miami, it's pretty late in his, so it's 1969, you know, it's not that long before he passes away, but just how quickly they like rose and fell. Like he starts talking too about like the audience and like, "Oh, kids today don't want to hear this kind of music. And they, you know, my crowd is getting older." It's like, dude, he was 27 when he died. It's not like he's Springsteen in his late 70s still playing. You know, people were calling him a has-been when he was 26. It's just crazy.
What's this story? Did they give him autopsy when he died?
An autopsy?
Yeah.
I don't think they ever did. So, like, and I didn't get into too much of all this. There's so much been written about how he died that, like, you know, they found him in a bathtub and they said he died of heart failure. And then some other people said he died of a heroin overdose and he didn't die in his apartment, that he died in a club and they moved him to the apartment as a cover up. Yeah, dude. And then some people say that he never did die, that he faked his death because he was so tired of fame and he was living out his years in, I don't know, Missouri or Paris or New York or some shit like that.
I wonder if he was like escaping to Paris. Like to get away from, like, if it would have got appealed and when it came to the thing, would he have stayed in Paris and been like a refugee in Paris?
Probably, yeah.
Remember that douche Ira Einhart?
Yeah.
Like something like that.
Ira Einhart was a Philadelphia, like a environmentalist or something, right? He killed his girlfriend and put her in a trunk. And then he fled to Paris and lived there for like 30 years.
Yeah.
But Yeah, dude, I've no doubt he was fleeing that. And I think he wanted to get away from fame. They said he was like spending a lot of time. He would just go for walks and he would spend a lot of time writing. Like he wanted to get more in touch with his art. And I guess he couldn't because he got so wrapped up in the rock star thing. But then he said he didn't like being a rock star, but he sure as hell liked all the girls that were around and the drugs and the booze and everything else.
Parties, the fucking orgies, the friggin' things we can't even imagine what rock and roll creates. You know? Let's hear a song, homie. I want to hear Lover Madly. I love this song. It's another weird song.
This has got a great piano to it, too.
Yeah.
Don't you love her way? Tell me what you say. Don't you love her badly? Wanna be her daddy? Don't you love her face? Don't you love her as she's walking out the door? Like she did 1,000 times before.
See, now, if he would have just kept being like, I'm a songwriter, that's some brilliant songwriting right there. You know, it's poetry. But he fucked it all up by saying, I'm going to do like real poetry instead of songwriting song shit. What, you know?
I just thought if you could isolate the piano playing on that, it almost sounds like music you'd hear like in an old like Western saloon.
Oh,
like somebody
yeah.
just banging on the keyboard yeah. with the shirt with the garter belt around the up on the upper sleeve. It's just a rocking.
Different
piano
kind of song.
Sounds.
Nothing sounds like that. There's nothing that sounds like that song.
Right. Me just saying that, I'm comparing it to piano music from like the 1840s. Right? It's like yeah. that's where I have to go. Another thing,
though.
Too, about... I do, too. I think that's my favorite Ray Manzarek playing on the door stuff. And also part of his artist... You know, his artsy side too. Like he was not afraid to do interviews and he would give these really long, like quotable artsy answers to questions about like, what does it mean to be alive and shit. Like some of the stuff you sent me, it was a thing on like his, you know, like lost interview tapes.
Yeah.
And I listened to it driving to work one day. I'm like, I can't listen to an hour yeah. and a half of this.
I listened to it all. I was like, oh man, he's woo. That's the yeah. only thing I could say. He's just, woo, he's out there.
Yeah. I can't listen to all this and then go into work and like function for 8 hours.
As intelligent he is, you feel dumber after you listen to him talk. Because it's like, what the fuck is, you know, is he trying to make you confused in a regular conversation? Like, the hell.
That's a great point. It's also a great point about him. It's like you feel dumber trying to listen to him come across as how smart he thought he was. And he also, part of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing, too, was like, I mean, he also took a shit ton of photographs, right? He gave a lot of interviews. And, you know, there's always the everybody knows that famous picture of him with no shirt on that the photographer yeah. had him do.
Yeah, I mean... I know he met Andy Warhol, but he never worked with Andy Warhol. You know, like that could have been amazing.
He was in that scene for a little while and then he messed around with Nico, who did a bunch of stuff with, Velvet Underground. And
I would say like the Velvet Underground's pretty close to the Doors.
They're a little more, well, I was going to say artsy, but
they're not as good as the Doors. No way near it.
I'm trying to make that comparison in my head. I know we were talking about like comparing Velvet Underground to the Talking Heads.
Yeah.
But I never thought of comparing them to the Doors.
It just feels like they have that same feel, like that dark psychedelic feel.
Like the Velvet Underground.
Like Andy Warhol whole thing was like pop dark. And, you know, and the Doors fit right in there.
The Velvet Underground to me is like New York City, like that New York that you always like talking yeah. about, like the dirty 80s,
yeah.
late 70s, you know, the jazz sound of the subways going by. And to me, that's the Velvet Underground.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Lou Reed is living, breathing New York City. Like his words and how he phrases things is amazing.
And I think he was a poet too, but he wasn't as out there as Jim Morrison was with some of the shit
he
wrote
about.
He was
a way better poet than Jim Morrison was. Oh, God. He may not have been a great songwriter or have good musicians backing him up like Jim Morrison did. But, like, you know, Lou Reed's poetry is fucking amazing. You know, he's the real deal. And Jim was just like a fake out.
When Leonard Cohen got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, his acceptance speech was Lou Reed was in the audience and he said something to Lou Reed like, you're in like the, you know, the art gallery in my head of poets or something like that. And Leonard Cohen is like, Leonard Cohen was a poet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, and hearing him say how much he admired Lou Reed as a writer was just really cool.
Love Leonard Cohen.
Yeah, dude, we'll get to him eventually too, man. I've got a couple of his books. I have a couple of his books of poetry.
Oh, wow. And, dude, it's good time to take a little break.
Yeah, man, that sounds good. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll talk some more about this, and we still have to settle the debate if he's brilliant or a buffoon. So we'll be back.
Stick around.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox in McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks. We're so happy to have them on board because they make a great product. Their motto is grown here, sewn here, because Boldfoot Socks are made in America. They have a variety of styles and designs for everything from working out or doing a podcast about music or going to work. They're also great people. The president, Josh, is a military vet, and the company donates 5% of their proceeds to veteran charities. He's also a really big music fan. So as soon as you're done listening to us, go on over to boldfoot.com and check out all the different styles they have. That's boldfoot.com.
With a little girl in a Hollywood bungalow. Are you a lucky little lady in the city of light? Or did you know the lost angel? City of night. City of night.
All right, we're back from the commercial break. Thanks so much for sticking with us. That was a little bit of L.A. Woman.
I think it's my favorite Doors song.
That's a great driving song, man. Like, you're driving down the Jersey Shore, taking the back roads, Got the windows down.
Yeah. I mean, his voice on that is, I think, sounds different than anything else. I think you can hear the weight that he put on in his voice in that song, you know, like all like he now he is a blues man. He is weighs over 200 pounds. You know, he's beer gut, whatever. He's not a sex symbol at all. But he like belts out that fucking song and it has like more meaning than any, I don't know, bullshit fucking touch me song, you know.
He looked really old when he grew the beard and he put on all that weight. And again, he's still in his 20s.
Unreal.
But it's also, you know, he had a rough paper route with all the drinking and the drugging and everything else that he had going on.
He always had this ambience of like Native American kind of thing. Even one of his songs, he talks about how a Navajo family got in a wreck, car wreck. And this is something that he witnessed as a little kid. And he said a spirit jumped into his soul from that accident of these Navajos.
Yeah, his family always, I think his sister was always like, it didn't really happen that way, but that was like a big part of his legend that he always talked about. And it's in the movie, the Oliver Stone movie. I think it opens with that scene.
Yeah,
of that, them seeing the dead people on the side of the road. And all that mysticism stuff. Like he started when he would get on stage, he would start doing like chants and all kinds of weird things. And
he had to do something. You're on stage, man. You gotta fucking come up with something. Like I only have like live references from the movie because there's only so much of live stuff recorded of him actual in concert, and a lot of it's him jumping up and down and throwing himself on the ground. Like the mayhem shit is like not even recorded. The riots, yeah, at the shows, the fires, the fucking people just way out on drugs and just using an excuse for chaos. Jim Morrison was giving them the right to go out there and give them the time to like, let's riot. Let's fucking give them something to fucking write about. Let's, you know, we are the doors of everything.
And people, the more weird he was acting and the more self-destructive, the more people were paying attention to him and the more the media is paying attention to him. It just became this whole like cycle. And you said he needed something to do when he was up on stage. I mean, he has the honor of being the first musician to be arrested on stage during a performance.
Was it New Haven?
Yeah, New Haven. He was fooling around with a female fan backstage and a cop walked back and the cop didn't know who he was and was like, hey man, you got to beat it. And Morrison mouthed off to him and Morrison wound up eventually getting maced. And then when the Doors finally took the stage, the Jim Morrison started, he like made up a song talking about like a little man in a little hat in a little, yeah, blue suit,
yeah,
and was really getting like nasty about what happened, which I get. I mean, hey, you got maced by the cops, and it kind of kept coming, going back and forth. And basically, they arrested him like on the stage, and were like, "Show's over." And
they dragged him off the fucking stage.
They dragged him off the stage.
Did you ever see that like that footage of the real footage?
Yeah.
He like stands there. And he makes like a goofy look on his face, like he's like messing around, and they just fucking pull him off the fucking stage. He like quotes it in one of the songs too. He starts talking about New Haven.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's a, I mean, that's a rather punk rock move, right? He's just like F the man. And
it was a
counterculture.
Different time, man. Like how everybody like backs up the cops now, mostly, you know, like everybody just against the cops in the 70s and the 60s and really strange times, you know, like the presence that the police put out there and is so different than what the presence of the police do now. It's two different worlds. And the respect, and the respect for cops have come a long way since those times, you know.
It was very, very counterculture at the time, and the Doors were very counterculture.
I think it was something that the generation did not understand at all, like the older generation. Like, they didn't get it at all. It might as well have been Marilyn Manson up there.
It was their bucket against authority, right? Because you got, like, NAM is going on and the hippie movement, and there's so much other things going on in America at the time when the Doors are at their peak.
And it's like, you know, like we're talking about that situation, him getting maced. You know, back going west, everybody in San Francisco is like, love, peace, and everything like that. And Jim Morrison, being from the Sunset Strip, or that's his home spot, he start fucking with the cops like they did on the Sunset Strip during the 60s. There was a huge riot in the 60s with the hippies and the cops. That's what that song by Buffalo Springfield's about. What's the name of the song, Bruce? Is something happening here?
Yeah. Shit. I love that song, too.
Yeah.
For what it's worth.
For what it's worth.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Yeah. But that was a real thing, you know? Like, the cops were against the long hairs. They fought each other. It was hardcore. You know, it was before, like, anybody had any respect for the cops. It was weird because it was counterculture, like you said. And everybody's all fucked up on drugs, and the cops are trying to fucking control everything, and everybody's mayhem. And, you know, what the fuck are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do but, like, have an iron claw?
One thing that I was reading, too, about him being a colossal asshole was how he talked to Janis Joplin, that Janis apparently, like, clowned him over the head with a bottle of Southern Comfort a couple times because he was such a jerk. And that she would always refer to him like he was like the biggest asshole in rock and roll. And she was something on like a TV interview. And the guy said something. I forget what it was. I don't remember. She was doing an interview and the guy was like, she had a cigarette or something. And the guy's like, oh, do you want me to light your fire? And she's like, oh, yeah, that's from that line's from my favorite singer. Ugh. And she always called Jim Morrison like that asshole.
Well, he was, man. I mean, on his good day, he was a jerk off. Like, you know, like.
Right. With Janis, too, is like Janis and Hendrix both died within like a couple months of each other. And I guess Jim Morrison used to always say, well, Janis and Hendrix are dead. You're drinking with number three.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like he was rather self-destructive at the end, too.
Yeah, he knew it. He had one goal. And is slowly kill himself. And that's what he did. But, you know, all this dark songs he put out, you know, there's some fucking happy songs, man. Like, I love Hello, I Love You.
Yeah.
It's a great upbeat song.
And it's such like a poppy kind of sound compared to what they were doing. Or like it's not a very complicated song. The lyrics aren't real complicated, but. Yeah, it's a good little tune. Here you go.
I love you, let me jump in your game. She's walking down the street, blind to every eye she meets. Do you think you'll be the guy to make the queen of the angels sigh? Hello, I love you.
Such a simple song.
No, but I'm listening with the headphones on, and I'm really listening to what Robbie Krieger's doing on that fuzzy guitar sound. It's great. There's so much going on with a little three-piece band. One of my favorite fucking songs by The Doors, and if I had one song, that would be Peace Frog.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Great song, right?
Yeah. Why do you like that so much?
I love the drums. I love how, again, he accents off of Jim's lyrics. I love that, man. I love it. I love when drummers do that shit.
I feel like I can, like, I could see that song. Like, it looks like there was always like those dance numbers in Austin Powers where like the camera angle is like going all weird. Like,
yeah,
it just has that kind of vibe to it.
It has a, it like definitely has a vibe.
And it's just a California dancing kind of sound.
You know what's real California is Touch Me. That's a real, more California than anything.
Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made? Now I'm gonna love you till the heavens stop the rain. I'm gonna love you till the stars fall from the sky for you and I.
This delivery is better in spoken words, man. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, that's straight up poetry. And his delivery of it is very spoken word. I don't know. And then it breaks into that I'm going to love you part. It's beautiful.
It has like a show tune kind of sound to it. Like a little bit of like a Vegas-y kind of thing.
That's why I like I think. It's very, very, if there was a power love or love power, whatever it is, that would be it at one of their songs. That was a hippie song. That would be their hippie song.
Hey, dude, I Roadhouse Blues might be my favorite song from them. L.A. Woman is really good. I've been in the bar when everyone's doing McCusker's and everyone's doing the Mr. Mojo Rising or singing.
Richard
Milhouse Nixon.
Nixon, that was a huge thing in my bar. You heard me do that a few times.
Yeah, I have.
When it goes. Mojo Rising. I go Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Yep. And then the whole bar starts doing it.
Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Yep.
Dude, play fucking Love Me Two Times.
All right.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today.
Dude, nothing sounds like that.
No.
Nothing sounds like that at all. It's such an original thing. It's the Doors. Someone I play music with, so nobody cares about the Doors. I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? You know, I wanted to play a song in my band, and they're like saying, oh, well, the Doors aren't very relevant at the time. So I'm like, you guys are fucking crazy. They're the Doors.
Yeah, dude, that's
While we're
playing
playing Jesse's Girl, while we're playing Jesse's Girl,
right?
And you
can
do
you can. There's a difference between like you can not like the Doors, but I mean, fuck, they're really important to all of this. You know, all this stuff that we just talked about, like the sound that they moved forward, or all this stuff about what the image of rock and roll is because of Jim Morrison. Doesn't know what he's talking about.
I know, and I got to play in a band with these people.
Dude, we're professionals, man. We know what the hell we're talking about.
Oh, man. Well, let's get down to it, Bruce. What is your opinion on Mr. Morrison? Is he brilliant or is he a buffoon?
He was definitely an asshole. I think he's a little bit more buffoon than brilliant. What about you?
I think he's a brilliant stage singer, rock and roller, everything. Nobody gets better than him. But his poetry is crap. You know, it's very blown out, very dragged out. And if anything, he thought he was more than he was because he was fucked up all the time. What gives you more beer muscles than anything? You know what I mean? You know, and he was just an asshole to people, to his fans and everything like that. And he's shitbag of the week. besides being a great performer, he's shitbag, and that goes a long way with me. So I think he's a buffoon.
I was thinking about that too. Last night I was getting ready to go to bed or something, and I was thinking that we talk a lot about, like, we like supporting musicians that we think are just good people, and he was not that.
He was not a good person at all.
And we haven't talked yet about the Lester Bangs quote from Almost Famous, right? When he said, Jim Morrison is a drunken buffoon posing as a poet. Give me the Guess Who. They have the courage to be drunken buffoons, which makes them poetic.
I just watched Almost Famous, and I think that's what gave me the idea for the show, homie.
I figured that's where you got it from.
Yeah. I mean, that was famous part of that movie, you know? And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, was he buffoon or was he brilliant? Yeah, I don't know.
Yep. But, I mean, and that's not the takeaway. I mean, he was brilliant, right? He wrote some great songs, and, you know, he played a role in that band being what it was. But yeah, I think he's more buffoon.
Yeah, I think he's more buffoon.
Well, there you have it, everybody.
He's just, fuck, man. He's a bartender's nightmare.
Yeah. Comic book guys are going to be coming for us, but that's okay.
What else? We all right, man. Keep on going. That's Jim Morrison, brother. What's at the end
there
of the show?
There you go. All right. Music news. I got two stories. The first one is fans are suing Madonna. So two fans are suing Madonna for starting her concert at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn more than 2 hours late. The fans argued that her lateness left them stranded at the venue because there was limited public transportation and ride-sharing options to come get them. And they argued that the concert goers all had to go to work the next morning and take care of their families. So the lawsuit, they're also suing Live Nation and the Barclays Center for advertising that the show would start at 8:30, even though Madonna is notoriously late. So Madonna was sued for this before, and this is where she's a real asshole. In 2019, she didn't go on stage till 12:30 in the morning, and she sat on the piano and she goes, "Here's something that all of you need to understand. A queen is never late." And then she started, because the audience started yelling at her that they wanted a refund. And she said, "The queen can never be late."
She is fucking delusional. Holy shit.
Rock and roll is not a job. But you're still a professional, man. So you imagine if you go to a show at 8 and she shows up 4.5 hours late. That is some Guns N' Roses shit.
So disrespectful to your fans. Your fans are everything, man. Your fans are everything.
Right.
Why are you going to jerk them off?
Right. You imagine some dude, like some guy our age brings his kid because she wants to see Madonna. And it doesn't go. She doesn't come on till 12:30. Like,
no.
I just couldn't imagine waiting 4 hours for that guard. I was like, dude, just like what a shitbag, man. I can't stand her. I think she's a fraud.
I went and saw her one time and I said, I'll never go see her again. It had nothing to do with time. It was her fucking performance. It was so artsy fartsy that it didn't even sound like any of her songs. You know, like, stop being a fucking artist. Go out there and be the fucking superstar that you are.
Right.
Or something comes along with that. Some responsibility comes along with that. You know, and on top of that, she's charging $200 for a t-shirt.
Again, like we were just saying with your buddies and your band, not liking the Doors. I'm like, you cannot like a band, but you still have to appreciate what they mean in the big picture. Madonna, businesswoman, did a lot for music, but I just can't stand her.
No, she's a terrible human being.
Yeah. And I know the comic book guys are going to come, you know, you don't like Kate Bush and you don't like Madonna. And
it's
whatever.
Not that I don't like Madonna. I only support good people.
Right.
Like, she's a fucking dirtball. Like, she treats her fans like garbage. Then I'm going to talk garbage on her.
All right. So the second story I have is, this was a really weird one. So, you know, Kat Von D, she was like that celebrity tattoo artist.
Yeah. Sure.
So she did a tattoo for a friend. There's a famous picture of Miles Davis, like with the finger over his lips, like
exactly
doing a shush.
What talking about.
She did a tattoo of that for a friend for free, and posted a picture of her doing the tattoo on social media. And the guy who took the photograph is suing her now for intellectual property, saying you're using my photo and you don't have the rights to it. And she's like, but it's not a, like, I'm looking at the photo and then drawing a tattoo. It's not the same thing. And a court is like the trial started this week. Like a judge ruled that this could proceed.
Wow.
And it's just and this photographer has gone after other people before. Like he'll go searching the internet for people that have this tattoo and he'll go after the artist for money.
That's lame.
But it's like, what happens if this goes in this dude's favor? It's going to open the door to
for
like,
so many tribute tattoos.
Right. Oh, hey, here's a picture of Quint from Jaws. I want that tattoo. And you're like, no, it's intellectual property. So
yeah, like yeah, I have a tattoo of the Joker. And I'd be like, oh, you can't have a tattoo of something that's famous like that.
Right. You didn't license that.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting. It's not directly related to music other than
no, but tattoos are rock and roll.
Right. And Miles Davis.
Yeah. I love Miles. No. You know that.
Yeah, so I'll keep an eye on that one.
Did you see Ozzy's going to do two more shows and call it quits?
I did see that he wants to do two more
in
like
Birmingham,
farewell shows
where he's from.
Yeah,
he wants to do two shows and that will be the end of the Oz Man.
He
better have a backup singer behind the stage because my man can't even walk up straight.
I think it'd be cool to see his farewell, but he's shot, man.
Yeah, and nothing is so disappointing than seeing your favorites shit out. Like, dude, Vince Neil is so bad now. It's so depressing to go and see Motley Crue because it's like he's so bad. And you know what? How good can Ozzy be being the way that he is? To hit a solid note? I don't think so. That with the body takes to do that. I don't think he could do that for 2 hours straight.
It would be cool to have him see him like a farewell, but yeah, what is that going to look like? Like, I don't know. You can go on YouTube and look up a video of like Johnny Cash's last performance, and it's really sad and embarrassing. And it's just, you know,
same thing with Sinatra, and just
yeah,
fucking leave it alone, man.
I did see that headline this morning, but
yeah.
All right, second thoughts, man. We got some feedback on our Hot Rod episode. Josh from Boldfoot Socks, he chimed in. He said, absolutely great episode. So many iconic car songs. Great job as usual. During the show, Ryan said, we could do an entire show on the Talking Heads. I beg you to make this happen. I can't explain how much I love the Talking Heads. Also, you guys saying the fast car is the female stairway to heaven is one of the greatest lines in podcast history.
I take pride in that one.
That was a good one.
You had that...
You were teasing that line before we started recording that you were ready to go.
I was, man. I had that all planned out. That's what I do with my time. I think about what I'm going to say on the show about things.
Right on, man. And Josh was, I sent you the clip today. The Boldfoot, they were on Twitter the other day. His girlfriend was posting that she ran a race wearing a Prisoners of Rock and Roll hoodie and wound up finishing first in the race a couple of weeks ago. Just love the support, man. It was awesome when you guys were in town and we grabbed a couple beers and always happy to talk music. And we said that, like, hey, man, we're going to put the Talking Heads on the list of stuff and we'll get to it.
Maybe we're on it this year, 2024. Talking Heads, we're on it.
We had an angle to it and we were both like, that sounds really cool. Let's do that. So,
yeah, look out for it.
Okay. We got an email from Neville from England, so we are worldwide, so I don't know if this is one of my daughter's friends, but he said, hello from the UK. Nobody loves their cars like Americans, so many songs about them, but we have our moments here too. You played Drive My Car by the Beatles, but forgot Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff we forgot, but you know, hey, we can't get to everything, dude.
Yeah, I mean, but
appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, my man.
Right on. Top of the morning to you, Governor.
And you drinking
we
some
also
tea.
Got a,
some tea and
right,
biscuits.
Some crumpets, fish and chips. We also got a comment from Blue48 online about the episode. Said, cars are a big part of hip-hop, too. You guys could do another episode just about hip-hop songs and cars.
True.
Absolutely true.
True.
Tons of songs about
so
cars
many.
And
so
like
many.
That, so.
Right on.
Yeah. So. Right on, dude. Appreciate the comment. So the electric chair. The electric chair is where we kill a song for being terrible, and you have a good one for this week.
I bet everybody was waiting for us to mention the end of the Doors, the song The End. So we are holding it to the end for the electric chair. Because this song is a buffoon song, dude. Like, you're just shock value and say you're gonna fuck your mom and shit. It's fucked up, man. So we're gonna send it to the chair.
This song got really popular, right? Because it was in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
It's 12 minutes long. They have so much other better things than this. This is what, yeah, they're being artsy for art's sake. And this is the stepping stone to that really long thing that we were playing. The lizard thing, all the spoken word shit.
Now, was this song after a Roman play? It comes from like some kind of ancient play, and it's a bunch of dialogue from that.
It's on the list of Rolling Stone's greatest songs of all time. There is a part of it that take lyrics from Oedipus, where
that's
like,
what
Oedipus,
yeah.
Oedipus was the guy that killed his father and slept with his mother, and you know, Greek tragedy.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah, dude. I don't know.
No, it's dragged out. It's depressing. It's really fucking dark. And my dad would call this suicide music. Someone would play this in the bar, and he was like, this is suicide music. That just came to me now, like remembering it right now.
Yeah. We wouldn't be able to sit here and talk through the entire song, because it's 12 minutes long, so why don't we just kill it and get out of here?
Do it, buddy.
We sentence you to death.
Woo. You've been on a roll, man, with the song topics and the songs for the electric chair.
It's all about making the show great, my friend.
I feel like you had that idea. You had the topic and then this song for the electric chair, and then we did everything else around it. We built the whole show around that.
It's all in my brain.
The two bookends. It's all good.
Yes, sir.
So that'll do it for episode 77 and our discussion about Jim Morrison. What'd you think? Do you think he was a brilliant or a buffoon? Do you agree with us? Disagree with us? Let us know. If you want to hear more of the songs we talked about today, you can go to the show notes and check out a link to our episode playlist. And if you want to hear more of us, you can follow us on your favorite podcast platform, leave us a review, and tell someone about us. You can also drop us an email, check us out on our website, connect with us on social media, or stop by the legendary McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia if you're in that part of the world. There's links to all that stuff down in the show notes, and we're going to circle back up. We're going to start working on our next episode. Well, shit, we've already started working on the next episode. I think we're going to do our look back on the music of 1994, albums that turned 30.
I can't wait. There's so many. Oh, my God. Everybody from Elton John to Pearl Jam.
Yeah. You already started on the playlist, and I was listening to the Lithium channel on Spotify this weekend, and it was like, oh, this was some 94, and trip back to the year we graduated high school, my friend.
Yeah, I'm going to wear flannel. It's going to rock.
I'm looking forward to it. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, guys. Thanks so much for listening to us.
Everyone, keep on rocking.
Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner. Of rock and
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.